listening to Quest to the Core, a podcast about leading with intention, clarity, and courage from the inside out, where the leadership journey gets personal, reflective, and powerfully real. In every episode, Jonna and Simone invite you into thoughtful dialogue that challenges assumptions, sharpens self-awareness, and equips you with actionable insights to lead with greater impact. Now, here is today's episode.
We've all said it. I just need to get out of my own way. Here's the twist. Maybe that isn't the goal. Maybe the doubt and fear that we try to shove aside are the raw materials we build with.
This is Quest to the Core, where we explore the inner work of leadership, the beliefs, mindsets, and choices that shape how we lead, learn, and live. I'm Jonna.
And I'm Simone. Today, we're going to flip that paradox. What we label obstacles may actually be fuel. That resistance we feel could actually be data. And that inner critic, let's put it to work as a collaborator and not a bully.
Because the space between us and our potential isn't meant to be empty. It's really meant to be alive. That's where we are. That's who we are, with curiosity, creativity, and all the parts of ourself that make our leadership real. So let's begin by looking at what we really call our baggage, or our stuff, as we're going to refer it to, and why it is often the starting point of our growth.
This idea, this label of baggage and stuff, let's name a couple of them. So there may be our anxieties, some of our self-doubts. When you think about artists, there's some sort of tension that they feel that they just have to get their stuff out, either on paper or out into the world. They actually create from that inner conflict. When you think about our stuff, for me, it really is, what are my habits? What are some of those things that are like the inner narratives that we talked about? What are some of those things that come up for you as well? What are some of your baggage or some of your stuff?
I often say our strengths at this point in our life and career are typically the things that cause us the most trouble or the most obstacles. And for me, a lot of times that is what helps me be successful, those strengths, but it's also that stuff. It's that uncertainty, or it's the doubt, or it is the habit of driving from those strengths that typically create what we consider obstacles in our path.
A lot of what we've talked about on several episodes is self-awareness and examining yourself. In this episode, we're really focusing on, getting out of our own way. And that sounds crazy. How do we do that? Because that's thrown out as a slogan. It's much easier said than done. It can be quite complicated to think about it. But what we talk about often in our episodes is really just be with it, examine it, look at it, become responsible for it, so that, it can really become the fuel that gets us to that next level.
Well, and I think the obstacle to getting out of our own way, as we were discussing this morning and you were providing me some coaching, is not necessarily clearing the path. And I think that's the part that we have to kind of wrap our brain around, that getting out of our own way doesn't necessarily mean that we're creating this smooth sidewalk that we're going to be able to walk right through. It really is understanding who we are and what is that obstacle? What is it that we're obsessing over that we feel like we need to get out of our own way? And for me, as we talked about, is that understanding, like I have to understand everything. And that understanding creates that obstacle. And it's, how do I be okay with that not completely understanding something?
Is it the understanding that's the obstacle, or the pursuit of the understanding that's the obstacle?
Exactly. Yeah. I think it's a little bit of both, depending upon the situation. And I think it's, in my head, it's, if I have that understanding, if I research and get all of the understanding, then the path is going to be clear for me. It's going to be easier to make decisions or accomplish something. But in reality, that path is not going to be clear.
And it's a very legitimate path, because it has worked so well for you in the past.
That it has.
Really has produced success. So why wouldn't you use it? And you face other challenges, or as we grow in life, or we're leveling up in areas, we pull on those patterns, those strengths that we've used before, and we expect them to work. But then when they don't work, there's this tension that pops up that could potentially be an obstacle.
And understanding those obstacles and understanding how they show up for us, that self-awareness piece, and then being able to not necessarily get out of our own way, but knowing what to do with it. That's where real growth happens.
A lot of the people who are very famous and very successful in life, their path to get there wasn't super smooth. There's always some sort of tension, struggle, and big obstacle that they had to overcome to get to where they are. And they will tell you, whether it's in the autobiography that you're reading or a TikTok that they may be on, they had a struggle, they faced it, messed up, faced it again, and persevered. So it was through that messy part that success came out. And I think a lot of young people today, young professionals, and even seasoned professionals, they stop at the obstacle because they think that success is supposed to be easy, but it's not. It's going to be messy.
Well, and I think that messiness can potentially make us feel like we're off track, mm-hmm. and that we're not moving in that direction that we want to. So I would love to hear from your perspective, maybe a time where you felt off track and things were messy, but only to realize that was actually when real growth happened.
Every single renovation project I've ever done. And for our listeners, I also, I have rental properties. I purchase distressed properties and I'll renovate them and either rent them out or flip them. And every single project, I go through this space of what have I done? Why did I think I could do this? Why am I doing this? And oh my God, I can't afford it. And it's every single one I've done. And at this point, it might be 14 or so that I've done. And that's a lot. You'd think that, okay, you did it the first time and then the next time it's a breeze. It's not. I face it every single one. It's this, and you'd ask it like, how does that like translate to growth? There's this confidence at the end of it that, okay, I faced this and I did it. And each project, the problem was different. The pattern and the name I gave to the problem was the same. Why did I do this? Why did I think I could do this? But the subject matter of that problem was different each time. So whether it was a electrical issue, a structural issue, or a permitting issue, or what have you, that it was this other big problem that each one, it's like, I've done a lot of these. I thought that I faced all the problems and I haven't.
And I'm sure there's more that's going to be coming with your next project.
I'm certain. How about you? There are times that you felt that you were off track because it felt really messy, only to figure it out that you weren't off track. You were growing.
Yeah, it happens all the time, especially, again, I know we've talked about me trying to understand things, but when I hear something or I encounter a concept or something that I don't understand, and that is where I feel like I'm in that zone of optimal learning where we talked about, that is completely uncomfortable because I don't know the information or I don't know the outcome. And sometimes I get really just hone in on, I've got to understand, got to understand, got to understand, and feel like I'm never going to have this deep understanding of what it is that I'm supposed to. And in that midst of the messiness of all this information, I really do come out with a not just concept of understanding, but an understanding of who I am, and really reveals kind of a more openness to whatever the concept was or the situation was or whatever that I needed to for my own personal growth, aside from whatever the concept was.
You said that you face this often for the next conflict that comes up. What would you shift, knowing what you know now about these other conflicts, what would you shift for yourself to signal for yourself that you're actually on the right path?
That's a great question. Trying to think about what I can shift, and especially in the moment. I also learner's number one in Clifton Strengths for me. And so sometimes it's getting lost in that path of just learning, and it's almost like an avoidance. I think part that I struggle with the most. And so being able to sit in, what is it that I don't need to know? And what is it that I'm okay with not knowing? But making that shift in the moment when I know that I'm just avoiding whatever is surfacing. Well, I think, how do we translate this into like teams and organizations? And when teams maybe look at the messiness as failures as opposed to growth or signs of innovation, what is it that teams can do?
Well, first off, I think they could give up the expectation that it's going to be a straight line. Inside the team, just go ahead and expect that the messiness is actually going to produce greatness. And for leaders on the outside looking in at teams, iterating to get improvements is sometimes seen as a failure by leaders.
Can you say that again?
If a leader has delegated a project or a big problem to a team, and they're on the outside looking in, sometimes when they view the iterating to improvements, so the team is taking on, we're making iterations that are making improvements, leaders see that as a failure or some sort of incompetence rather than coming out fast with the one big full solution. And I think leaders need to take a step back and celebrate those iterations because it is a sign that the team is getting in there and playing around with the messy stuff and making these incremental improvements while they're still in their process or still in their team. And all of those, the multiple improvements and iterations, it's going to come out with greatness on the other end. And it's not a failure.
Because I think the stuff is what makes who we are ultimately. Mm-hmm. And I think having the self-awareness to understand what your stuff is, mm-hmm. and then having the awareness as a team to understand what our stuff is. Because again, as we said earlier, our stuff typically is what helps make us successful as an individual or as a team, but is also the thing that can potentially get in our way. And so having that awareness of our stuff and being able to navigate it really is the key.
It is. It's that messiness gives us momentum to move forward. So the stuff looks messy and it's supposed to. The messy is not bad. The messiness only shows up because people are really committed. And we're talking about it as being fuel to build that momentum, to build that creativity. But what does it really mean to get out of your own way? So, Jonna, when you hear get out of your own way, what does this sound like to you?
Well, it sounds like there's something I need to clean up. It sounds like I need to remove clutter. I need to get my stuff together. And as I often say, sometimes I feel like a hot mess, so I need to like clean up my mess. But what if clutter is actually what makes us human? What makes us great is that stuff, that clutter. And so if we actually remove it or we clean it up or we sanitize it, then we actually become humans or become leaders that may not have the depth that we should or can have. And a lot of times, creativity needs tension, right? Creativity needs that ambiguity. Creativity needs that mess in order to produce something great. And I think you can see that very easily in the arts when you think about an artist, when you think about a musician. And a lot of times, great work is produced out of that messiness outside of, you know, that clutter is how greatness is produced. So if we remove the clutter, if we clean up that mess, then we basically won't have soul or heart into a piece of art or a piece of music. And then when we think about leadership, if we clean up that clutter, if we remove that clutter, then we are not truly being our authentic self or being an authentic leader. I don't know if you've seen that played out.
And people trying to be just this perfect leader, there's nothing wrong. I've buffed out all of my flaws and you may come across as polished, but you're also empty. I don't want conflict-free leadership. I don't want conflict-free workspaces. You know, I want conflict-competent leaders. I want teams that are competent at dealing with conflict, because when that tension is integrated, what's left is something that's just very steady. There's a core that is just unshakable, and the edges are honest. And I'll take that any day over the polished stuff.
Well, and I think to all of our previous episodes, we talk about the experience that we want to create, and we talk about who we are and understanding who we are and how we show up helps create that experience. So if we don't have the stuff, if we aren't in the stuff and sitting with the stuff, then we don't create a true experience for someone when we've cleared away all that stuff or we've cleared away the inner conflict. We haven't really created an experience for someone during our interactions.
What comes up for me as you say that is that including the messy and being responsible or accountable for that messy allows my voice to get truer, not thin and weak. That's what comes up for me. It's a powerful voice that is possible.
Yeah, because I think if we think about those leaders that you described that are flawless, that seem too perfect, it's almost disengaging.
Mm-hmm.
Because they don't seem real and we don't feel like that we can be our real self either, which then creates this, what I say, non-experience. You're doing your thing, they're doing their thing, but there's not really a true experience that can create something great.
Well, I have a question for you. How might embracing that imperfection and that this whole messy contradiction make you a more trustworthy leader?
Well, that's a great question. I think trust is not about being smart. It's not about appearing polished. It's not about being the best in front of. It's trust is about being real. Like, people's human side want to see the human side of someone else. And that's where trust begins.
Yeah.
Right. So I think the conversations, the experiences that you create builds that trust, right? In those moments through showing up as who you are. And that's not saying, you know, I mean, we've talked about this in other episodes. That's not saying, well, you know, I'm just that way. You're just going to have to deal with it. That's not what I'm meaning. It really is having that awareness of your messiness and showing up as you are, bring your whole self to. And I think that is where trust really is built once you've extended that trust within that relationship.
Yeah, I started to chuckle because as you were talking, I was remembering, you know, art classes where I'd get upset that I messed something up. And then the teacher was like, no, just incorporated it. Nothing is a mistake in art. You just incorporate it into the piece. And what if we brought that to leadership?
I think that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I think the goal isn't removing. It's not clearing the clutter. It's not cleaning it up. It's getting out of our way really is about how do we integrate that?
Yeah. So maybe like when I need to understand comes up and says, hey, Jonna, you need to understand. You just say, hey, wait a second. No, I don't. You can sit right here. I have a place for you right here. I'm not going to use you right now.
Well, I think that's a great example for myself because that is something that I struggle with quite frequently. So I would love to have you share an example for yourself of what are those patterns that you see that show up that you can set aside.
The list is long. The list is long. The I'm not good enough always pops up. And usually it's because I want something to be perfect or I want something, you know, just to be an exceptional experience for other people and for myself. Just setting it aside, saying, no, it's okay. This doesn't have to be perfect. I'm learning right now. And at the first part of us getting started with doing the podcast, I had to set that aside a lot. And sometimes I did it more successfully than others. Like, oh, okay, there's not room for you today of being not enough because you are, because you're learning and everybody's enough in learning. So having to deliberately set that aside for myself is, it at times is a struggle, but it helps me to shift my mind and my thinking so that really loud voice of I'm not enough is not getting in the way of me thinking. Because it usually takes up a lot of space to think that way.
It does. And I think there's a lot that we could unfold here with this paradox of inside of getting out of your own way and kind of reframing what that actually means. Because I think if we change the way that we think about it, if we change the way that we talk about it, it can have a totally different outcome. And I think you brought up an excellent point when we were planning for this, that even compliments have potential of attaching to those inner thoughts that we have and can spark more messiness, so mm-hmm. to speak, and create what we all know is, you know, feeling an imposter syndrome. I would love to hear from your perspective what that impact could be for you specifically.
You know, imposter syndrome has really jumped up a lot in conversation the past couple of years. That it's a great label because it's these well-meaning compliments from that we received when we were junior at something and we were learning. And then when we leveled up, those compliments were still ringing true because that compliment leaves an imprint of an identity. And so we're now living in that identity. We're not living in that compliment. So we have to continue to prove that that is what exists. But when we're at that next level, it's impossible to live into that particular identity because you're new at it, or it's amplified. So it's at a much bigger arena rather than just a small group. So one example, one of the compliments I would get is, you know, you just make this look so easy. And I, you know, internally would translate that to being, oh, my effort needs to be unseen from others. So that's what I have to keep doing, is it just needs to look easy every time I do it. What I would bring on is, particularly when my not good enough was showing up as well too, and it wasn't easy for me and I couldn't make it look easy for other people, it was like this real tension inside of me. So what was going on was the tension, which impacted my performance when I got to that next level, either the bigger team or even on this podcast platform, shifting my mindset from, okay, that easiness, I designed it in, I engineered it in. So why not just show people what that system is so that other people can either repeat it, or that I know for myself that that's, I can design that system in and that ease for myself. I don't know if that answered your question.
It did. And it's very similar to one that I was thinking of for myself. And one that I've often heard is, you're a natural. And I think for me, going back to my inner narrative of, I'm just average, that I can't show anybody struggling, right? Like if I'm just a natural and I'm going to be better than average, then I cannot show any type of struggle whatsoever, that's not allowed.
But you actually had to learn it.
Yes, absolutely. But I can't do it in front of anybody. I have to go spend all the hours behind the scenes so that it is seen as, right? But I think embracing the fact that we don't have a magic wand, we can't just wave a magic wand and be good at something, and to be open and share, right, what I've been deliberate about. And I think which kind of sparks my desire to share any knowledge or anything that I've learned, I want to share it with people because I have gone through the struggle and in gaining that knowledge and understanding and want to share that. So really having to kind of shift my acceptance that there is struggle and there is sweat and hard work and time and energy that makes it look natural.
Well, it's that compliment that really can impact how that other person shows up, you know, later in life. And we don't think about it because we think it's great because we're building that person's confidence, which is what is also needed. So that's where that paradox really shows up. You know, a paradox is something that, you know, when you examine it, it actually turns out to be true, you know, but it's got both sides. There's two sides to it. And so we need to be considerate of that, from when we're giving a compliment to others and when we're creating our inner story based on the compliments people have given us.
Absolutely. So I think maybe the paradox really is this: in trying so hard to get out of our way, we risk skipping away from who we are, from ourselves, which leads us to probably one of the most misunderstood characteristics inside of us, is that inner critic, which we've talked a lot about. But how do we reframe that for our success in getting out of our own way?
Well, you know, that inner critic gets a really bad reputation. It's this loud voice in our head that, you know, it's telling you and it's trying to protect you because it worked. And it really can screw some things up. It's in there shouting, you know, you're not enough, or you can't mess this up, or who do you think you are to do this? That inner critic is there because we care really deeply about something. So that's when it shows up. It doesn't just show up on any, you know, random Tuesday. It's like because we really have our values that are rooted in this, our identity, and we really want to do something well. And that's when the critic's going to show up. So what do we do if, instead of silencing that critic, Jana, what do you recommend?
Well, I think one way is to use it as a data point, which we've talked about in the past. But I think, again, I am on this journey with everyone else, but I think if we use it as a collaborator and consider it more of a relationship with and understanding when that critic comes up, it can help us surface what are those things that we value, what are those things that we fear, what are those blind spots that maybe we don't want to acknowledge, and really transforming that critic into more of an insightful partner through our journey.
If you treated your inner critic as a collaborator, as you said, what new relationship might emerge?
I think it really does boil down to providing myself more grace than I typically do, and allowing that critic to help me see what I provide for others, I don't provide for myself, and what's okay for others is really okay for myself. I think it's extremely difficult, and I think you have to be intentional and intentional about wanting to build that relationship with that inner critic and wanting to be open to what is surfacing, which can be difficult, especially when, for myself, achieving, moving on to the next, getting something done, and just sitting in something is hard. It's hard just sitting in something and being okay with it.
What's possible if you do just sit in it and let it be there?
Well, tremendous growth is possible. Mm-hmm. Growth beyond probably what is even seen or thought or imagined in that particular space. But because it's unknown, it's hard.
If you stopped silencing that inner critic, and you started to actually have a dialogue with it, what would shift in your leadership?
But that's a great question. Can you repeat that one?
Yeah. What would shift in your leadership if you stopped silencing that critic and started to have a dialogue with it?
There's so many different elements that I think the first one would be greater confidence in leadership, greater confidence in making those decisions as a leader. Even though I do perceive myself as a very curious person, I think being more open to and seeing bigger pictures beyond trying to gain the knowledge and beyond trying to answer the question immediately, I think it could create a bigger shift in just opening possibilities. How about for you?
If I silenced my inner critic and started having a conversation with it, I think I would get slower. I have a tendency just to jump on and just start showing that I know it or I could do it. And it would have me pause more and appreciate the pause. And we've talked about the importance of pause. And I don't do that enough. I think if I stopped silencing that critic and just had a flat out conversation, I'd be slower, which would then give me more speed.
And allow you to be the best version of yourself.
Yeah. Yes, definitely.
It's funny how that works, right?
It is funny. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, what I'm getting from this conversation is that some of the most original ideas come out of that tension that we might have with our internal critic. When we wrestle with that voice, you know, we're forced to sharpen and refine and push past that surface level thinking that, you know, may happen when we just try to, you know, just stifle that critic rather than just say, hey, let's have a full on conversation.
So maybe the real work isn't to silence the inner critic, but to truly integrate it as part of that creative process, that part of growing as a leader.
And when we embrace the critic, what emerges isn't just a performance. It's a fuller expression of who I am as a person. That's where authenticity and true potential live. And that's where the core framework gives us a roadmap.
It really does. We could go through each one of the components of core, but I think the one that probably speaks the most to me is the embrace. It is not to get out of my own way, but to bring all that I am into that path and really be in it, that I need to embrace what is showing up and need to embrace what it is that I can do with it or not do with it and be okay with that.
I think I'm right with you on that one. The article we read getting out of your own way. Had a great quote in it. Getting out of your own way means being with who you are moment to moment, whether you like it or not.
And that's hard. That's where embrace comes in, is just embrace it. Not labeling it good or bad, right or wrong. It is fully being open and embracing what it is for you, what it's not for you, and being able to sit in that, I think, is where I'm going to be this week.
This brings us to our reflection. It's really important for us to hold the fact that we can't disclaim the stuff that's there. Our stuff, it just may be overwhelming, it may be embarrassing, or it may be irritating to us, but it's ours. It's us, and it's there. So this week, use your stuff intentionally. Use the right stuff, the right time, the right level of intensity. Let that other stuff that's not needed in the moment just sit there. And use your stuff as fuel, not as friction.
Which leads us to our next episode. And we have been talking about taking different concepts from our past episodes and adding some new ideas or ways of thinking, as we always do, to help us as leaders to elevate others within their own potential, as well as getting them ready for that next level. Super excited to transition from inward to outward is kind of where we're going. Don't forget to access our resources on our website, www.questtothecore.com. And as always, our discussion guides are out there that you can use with a group or a team, very much like a book club tailored to the content for our episodes.
We have a very special thanks to Grammy-recognized hit songwriter Cliff Goldmacher for our theme song. Reference his information on our website and the services that he provides for developing your leaders.
And until next time, sit in your stuff. I invite you to sit with me, because that is what I'm going to be doing. It's what I've been doing this past week. I will continue to this week. So sit in your stuff, and would love to hear from those that are listening what that stuff is for you and how you're doing.